I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a very full menu on the Political Breakfast this week. Happy to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host, bringing you opinions from the left and the right. The Republican primary runoff for Georgia governor has been shaken up by some secret recordings and by the fallout that's come since they were released. In the meantime, Democrats have some runoffs of their own in what they hope will be some competitive congressional districts in the suburbs north of Atlanta. And Atlanta could get a World Cup match or two when the international soccer tournament comes to North America in 2026. Our lineup is a little bit different this week. Theron Johnson is away. Joining us for the first time, Michael Owens. He is the chair of the Cobb County Democratic Committee and former candidate in Georgia's 13th Congressional District. On the Republican side of things, Brian Robinson is again sitting out because he is a paid consultant to Casey Cagle's campaign. Joining us again, Chuck Clay. He served for close to a decade in the state Senate in the 90s. And then as chairman of the Georgia GOP. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you. And Michael Owens, this is your first time.
This is my first time. I'm happy to be here. Thanks a lot, Dennis.
Good morning.
Let's start with that Georgia Republican gubernatorial runoff, secret tapes. We've talked about that a little bit last time. But now there's all sorts of fallout, including a request by a couple of state lawmakers, Bill Heath and Susan Holmes, to the U.S. attorney asking for a criminal probe of whether Casey Cagle got something tangible in return for his position on a bill. Chuck Clay, at what point do Republican primary voters say, enough already, I'm going to sit this out, I'll even look at the Democrats, or is this just inside baseball?
Well, first of all, I expect Bob Mueller will be waiting in on this issue. There's got to be a novel or a movie in here. Somebody's got to be pulling the strings. It's atypical in the sense, and I know time is limited, but what occurred, I think, with Lindsey, Senator Tippins, Clay Tippins' uncle.
Yes, and it was Clay Tippins, who came in fourth in the primary, who recorded his conversation with Casey Cagle as Casey Cagle was seeking his endorsement. And it was that recording that got everything going because it involved Casey Cagle's dealings with Lindsey Tippins, Education Committee Chair, and Clay Tippins' uncle. That's about as simple as you can make it.
Nothing in this one's easy. What occurred during the session, I thought, was very, very contra good policy and stand up in the sense that Lindsey Tippins is a wonderful stand-up guy. If you want a bill passed, as he would, any chairman would make clear, one of two things. If I can't support it, you can replace me. If I want to really just pass it, you can send it to another committee. But I think sending something to a committee, an important committee, a key piece of legislation about multi-million-dollar funding between charter schools, public schools, voucher, the whole gamut, important stuff, was suddenly changed at the last minute under the nose and without the permission or acceptance, permission they don't need, acceptance of the chairman. You can't function that way. He should have been told face up that we're going to pass this bill and I'll send it over to finance. I can send it to some other. I can send it to DNR. But if it comes to your committee.
Department of Natural Resources.
But if it comes to your committee, one, you either can step down, or two, I'm going to let you be a committee chairman. Now, enough said on that. So there's a grievance I've never in my life heard of, secret taping of fundamental discussions about whether it's endorsements. This is about as hardball brass knuckle politics as you can get. I'm not going to get in anybody's mind or thought or shoes, but the idea of surreptitiously taping to me is beyond the pale of ethics. But then secondly, on top of that, it is a bombshell. I don't know that it's the game changer. We all say, okay, it's kind of on that even tack, where's the money, where's this, and we know we're going to hit on this, we're going to hit on that. Every time, just like back in my DA days, every time you think a trial's going perfectly, watch out. something's going to get off trail. So it is a different race now.
Will Republican voters, though, on the one hand, make a choice based on this, or on the other, peel away? Just say, ugh, this is too much.
Exit polls and smarter people than me, you're going to have a little bit of all of the above, realizing that voters so small and you're going from a 15-16% down to a 4-5% turnout. The people who go there are by and large hard committed to whoever it is they want to be. Casey's vulnerability, that this is not over, but his vulnerability is not as well known as somebody may have been coming like Nathan or Roy Barnes and that type of thing with just deep, deep roots in the business community. What I think you're going to more likely see where a game changer is not so much on noses, but it's going to be on money. How many of these substantial contributors start hedging their bets? Because if Brian is able to put up 700.5 million, Secretary of State Kemp, to really put a, you know, preferably $1 million, $1.2 million in a campaign on it, yeah, it's an easy soundbite that you have a hard time rebutting. And we can talk about timing because the timing is now.
Democrats have to be enjoying this, but, you know, is there any downside for them in all of this, or do they just sit back and watch?
I mean, there's a certain aspect that, of course, we're sitting back watching and kind of loving this to a certain extent. For the first point is that we didn't have a runoff, right? So we were able to, you know, May 23rd kind of start to rally the troops and everyone, you know, get on board Team Abrams, and move forward. So that's already started, right? I mean,
Roy Barnes, who had endorsed Stacey Evans, has now endorsed Stacey Abrams. So
exactly.
While the Republicans are going at it, the Democrats are knitting the coalition together.
Yes. Stacey Abrams had an educational forum, I think, just yesterday. Fantastic event, went well. So, I mean, that gelling is there as move forward. So, you know, from now till July 24th, we get to watch all the moves kind of from the Republican Party. And you
but
know,
the Republicans are getting attention.
They
voters
are getting
are
attention.
Watching.
They are getting attention. And some aspects is, well, you know, this is politics. And, you know, what's happened with Lieutenant Governor Casey would seem to be great news for the Kemp folks. But then, you know, Brian Kemp has this, you know, loans that he took out and he hasn't paid for, and were they his or were they the businesses? So at the same time, you may think he's getting a leg up, turns around and he gets hit with something as well that could be another bombshell.
And he will be.
Yeah, and this is, and I'll ask both of you this question, because what we're seeing are, on the one hand, from the Kemp side, requests for the U.S. attorney to look into Casey Cagle's actions. On the other side, lawsuit against Brian Kemp about unpaid loans, as Michael Owens just mentioned. These are the kinds of things that get a lot of attention when they're filed, especially late in a campaign. Then after the runoff, they could just go away. But what matters here is, okay, whether there's any there for any of these legal moves, just file the lawsuit, file the request. It's bad publicity. You know, you're kind of using, if it's in bad faith, yeah, you're
using
the process
for
something
sure.
else.
Sure. And that, however, hate to say it never occurs, but you'll be shocked to find, at least, that in fact it does. It's hardball time. Now, the issues, we've known these issues are going to be, I did not know about the personal stuff. It's not my, don't even want to go there particularly. But, you know, Brian's Achilles heel, or Kemp's, Secretary of State Kemp's, is going to be this whole election issue and some of the occurrences, not necessarily his fault, but they are factual. And you're going to see a barrage of those ads. You are going to see, obviously, what occurred on these taped conversations in ads. That's out of the blue. Some of the underlying issues may have been there, but it does give a focal point to say why he's just the usual same old politician willing to say or do anything, and the other guy's an incompetent administrator because there was leaks and gas. Okay, that's pretty common turf. To me, also more important, as it always is, who's got the resources, i.e. money. And then secondly, folks don't think that the election process is changed. Early voting. It starts July 5th. That's a week or two away. Once that date goes by, the bulk of the media needs to be spent right now, because 2 weeks,
I mean the ads.
In any campaign, he or she who waits now until that two-week window, the traditional one, you may have already lost the game.
Michael Owens, are the Republicans, in attacking each other, giving Stacey Abrams and her campaign kind of a roadmap for some of the ads they will run in the general election?
I would say yes to a certain extent, but, you know, whether we're talking about secret tapes or we're talking about, you know, whose pickup truck is bigger or, you know, any of these issues are gone, they're not issues at the hearts and minds of Georgians. I think Chuck made one statement where he talked about, you know, what Brian Kemp has done is kind of, you know, the issues, let's just say, he's had as Secretary of State, particularly around what many people feel are voter integrity issues and, to a large extent, data privacy issues. And these are issues that he's going to have to continue to really deal with. So, no, as far as the secret tapes and the money being loaned and not paid, those are kind of semantics kind of on the side. I think it's going to play much more of a part in the primary runoff. But I think when it gets to the general, voters across Georgia are going to hear about real issues.
Now, Democrats, meanwhile, have some runoffs in the 6th and 7th congressional districts. Districts they hope will be competitive. Everybody remembers the last contest for the 6th, the John Ossoff-Karen Handel race. But now you have a runoff, Kevin Abel and Lucy McBath in the 6th. But this time, though, with an incumbent, Karen Handel, who's well-known on the GOP side. Michael Owens, is the roadmap for the 6th completely different for Democrats? Is it a much tougher go this time?
It's completely different because there's not a gentleman named John Ossoff in the election. I mean, first and foremost, that election was far beyond anything that anyone could have imagined and that we would expect to see again. So, I mean, not seeing that same fever around an election, it doesn't concern me. Karen Handel now being an incumbent, I don't think has endeared herself to the people of the 6th District. There's issues even that she has there around, you know, publicly stating she was going to do town halls and she was going to be engaged and hear what all voters in the 6th had to say. And that just really hasn't been true. So,
but she's also been fairly quiet and fairly cagey in not taking on President Trump and yet subtly saying where she disagreed with him, for instance, on tariffs and so forth. She's played a very careful small C conservative game here.
Sure. So, well, that's where you take a look to this election with the two candidates. You have Kevin Abel, who's been unabashedly anti-Trump, but with a strong business message as well. You know, he's an immigrant. I think he came here at 14 or 15 mm-hmm. years old from South Africa. Has been a businessman in the Alpharetta North Fulton community for over 20 years. So he has a decidedly message that is anti-Trump, immigration, and is really pushing that. Lucy McBath, on the other hand, is a totally different candidate, right? I mean, she's been a national spokesperson for the anti-gun violence movement, which is obviously now has been huge.
Well, she lost her son because of it.
She lost her son, unfortunately, at 14 years old because of it, and she has been a national-level advocate ever since. So in some ways with her, it's a little different. She's a national-level candidate that's really introducing herself down locally to the people within the district.
Chuck Clay, any concerns for Karen Handel here, no matter who wins the Democratic runoff?
No. And I don't mean that flippantly. Obviously, you build and you compete, and I've been on both sides of a lot of different races. Nobody runs to lose. There can be movement by losing, win losing. You start fielding candidates. You start fielding better candidates. You start coinciding with demographics, exactly how we built our successes. As I told folks, I was the 11th Republican out of 56. If you looked it up in the dictionary, that's irrelevant. You'd see my picture. But we always thought that we were moving and growing. So you gotta make good candidates coincide. The Dems are getting better. This is still one of the most Republican districts, not in Georgia, in the country. We know that. And Karen is a smart politician, and I mean that in a positive vein. she'll be back.
You know, Dennis, last year, when Tom Price was prior to the actual confirmation hearing,
he was the Republican congressman from the 6th district.
Exactly. And I started this group called the 6th Congressional District Task Force, whose job it was to kind of take all the energy that we had from the Women's March and all the excitement that was going on, the energy, and move it towards ultimately trying to win this seat. And I remember in January, it was a discussion that we didn't even have a chance. Why are we wasting our time? It was a special election. There are going to be two Republicans put into the jungle primary, and they were going to move forward. Fast forward to today, and that discussion is kind of almost what you said, Chuck, where we've moved that needle, and the idea of saying we have candidates in this race. Went to April 18th of that year, where John Ossoff, 48.1%. I mean, in a field full of 18 candidates, I think he garnered 48% of that vote. So we've moved the needle a long way. So this isn't, you know, one election versus the next. It's where we're going and the movement that the blue wave is happening.
In the 7th Congressional District, an area that is demographically changing, where Democrats have been hoping to perhaps flip the district, you have a runoff between Carolyn Bordeaux and David Kim. And one of the folks who didn't make the runoff but who has a significant amount of support, Kathleen Allen, kind of went against the Democratic playbook for statewide candidates, Michael. She issued a statement saying, I don't like either one of these people, really, although I'll probably vote for Carolyn Bordeaux, but I'm not endorsing either one. That's not what we're seeing from Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans. Is this going to hurt the Democrats in an area where they can ill afford any kind of dissension or disunity?
Right. You know, it's tough to lose an election. It's really, really hard to come out on the other end and be the team player and be willing to step up and support the candidates that are moving forward. So, and someone could be your fierce opponent, right, that you've ran against for the last several months. And we've seen that in several instances with Democrats in this primary season. You know, one could argue whether Kathleen, you know, by not making an endorsement, why even need to make a statement at all?
It was a lengthy one, too.
It was a very lengthy one, you know, but you know, she was a self-professed true progressive in that race. I reiterate, self-proclaimed. And, you know, you come down to the end of it. It's like, well, what are you going to do to move this forward? She's kind of been a little counterculture the entire time. I don't think she really raised any money, didn't really spend any money in the race.
But does this hurt the Democrats going forward into the general election if they can't get their troops in line? And this is an area, Gwinnett County, where they're really going to need the help.
I don't think so. I mean, Kathleen is one but many progressives in that area, and she doesn't have the largest following. I mean, I respect what she said and ran as a candidate, but it's not going to be an issue where it's going to hold us back.
I tend to agree. It's short term. Long term, what choice do folks have? Now, they can go sit home, but if you do believe in the Democrat mantra, then I find that most of that eases away, and I'd be remiss if I didn't extend, even though it's years ago, my condolences to anybody who's lost a child through a tragedy that had mentioned. Yeah. My heart goes out.
Let's pick up on some of the messages, perhaps for Georgia, from some of the primaries in other states. In South Carolina, Republican Congressman and former Governor Mark Sanford lost to State Representative Katie Arrington, who said she is all in with Trump and he's not. In Virginia, Corey Stewart, who had made Confederate monuments one of his big campaign issues, won the Senate nomination on the GOP side. Here in Georgia, we see members in both parties pushing to away from the middle, let's say. Chuck Clay, as you look at those results on the GOP side, does that say, look, folks may decry people moving to the extremes, but it works?
Sadly, it has. I could go into a history of my opinion as to why we are so both socially and politically fragmented. That is always played. If you're in a safe district, Democrat or Republican, your challenge is either going to be from the left or right, and it results in harder and harder positions. Now, a lot of other reasons included. I generally look at political parties, you have to. You know, the old adage, you got to get to 50 plus one, or you're a debating society, not a political party. That's true with both. You know, we survived the evangelical, the Robertson, you around here for the Pat Robertson mm-hmm. wars and fist fights breaking out at the state convention down in Columbus. We pulled those together. The rougher edges were honed down, and I see some of that with Trumpism. There is no doubt that it's a different view, a different window looking at the process from working class, middle America, often Southern, aggrieved in many ways, and rightfully so, economically, educationally, religiously, ethically, morally, all the things that all of these issues. And it's coming in a different package. But I do think over time, we have to deliver a consistent conservative message that keeps you at 50 plus one. In this business, if you ain't growing like the shark, you're dying.
Is the GOP, though, Chuck, the party of Trump, as Katie Arrington, the winner in the South Carolina congressional primary there, she said that in those words. We are the party of Donald Trump. Is that a winning message in a general election?
Well, it depends on where you are.
How about here?
It's a fact. Well, I think clear here it will help. I don't think it's the game changer because I don't hear the kind of some of those debates, at least as yet, of making a litmus test for or against Trump. In fact, in some respects, that's easier to do in a Republican primary because it's going to move Republican mm-hmm. voters, and it's proven to do so. But look, that's not unique for a president. We can talk about the pros and cons to redefine, at least in their tenure, the face and shape and the voter base. It went to Clinton. It went to Ronald Reagan. I don't remember looking back mm-hmm. anybody arguing that, at the time and place where Andrew Jackson was elected president, they thought he was the absolute anarchist that would destroy democracy, not just in the party, but in the nation. And mm-hmm. somehow we survived.
But you have folks like Bob Corker, the retiring senator from Tennessee, saying it's like a cult these days. I mean, how does that help the GOP when it has to win midterm elections and governorships like the one here?
Bob didn't call me on that comment. probably would have used different verbiage. But no, I don't think it is helpful right now. We're broad enough to have dissent, but it doesn't need to look personal, animosity-based, and vindictive.
Michael Owens, though, Democrats could fall into a trap here of saying, we're going to center our message around that. Just say, hey, if you don't like Trump, look at the Republicans. They're calling themselves the party of Trump, or at least some of them are.
Sure.
You Republicans who don't like Donald Trump, come over to us. That's very tempting. Is it a winning formula, though?
I don't think it's a formula we have to take on. I think Republicans themselves saying that they are the party of Trump is doing us enough favors and will do in the general. I understand why in the primary, right, when we got folks running to the left and running to the right, that makes sense. I mean, there's an ongoing debate now about, you know, who's the true conservative on the Republican governor, right, whether it's Casey Cagle or Brian Kemp. How conservative can you be?
But that's kind of standard fare,
yeah,
pretty
so,
much.
Yeah, so, you know, so the idea of Donald Trump, and I don't, you know, he is the president of the United States. And I mean, the president of the United States single-handedly is able to shape a lot of things. I mean, you've seen that playing out now with North Korea and other things. And I mean, there are people that think that this is on the right track and the right things are happening. And because of right now when it is, he is getting a legitimate boost. There are people that believe truly that the negotiations and the things that are happening is going to motivate people to go out and vote. And so those Republicans right now that are standing side by side with him are seeing some victories around that.
And meanwhile, Democrats here in Georgia have decided, okay, at least at the top of the ticket in the governor's race, we're going to take the progressive road at a time when you're trying to win over moderates who might be disaffected with what Senator Bob Corker called a cult on the Republican side. Is that going to help you to say we are unabashed progressives and yet we still need to win a general election?
It helps us when we talk to the core principles, values, and ideals that a Democratic Party is espousing, right? When we talk about expanding health care, when we talk about affordable housing, when we talk about, you know, making a living wage, those are things that Georgians from Atlanta to Tifton are going to care about. And in November, that's going to be the messages, that's going to be the deciding fact when people go out to vote. So when you hear Stacey Abrams talk about, you know, providing more robust education for all Georgians, that isn't something that she has to say to pull Republicans over. That's something that's going to speak to every single family that's trying to decide what the best options are for their kids.
Well, I mean, I have nothing but high respect for, obviously, Representative and now, obviously, the nominee, Stacey. In fact, I'm not changing my political color, but I've got to be at a meeting where she's talking to an ed group that I do represent later, and she'll do an outstanding job. The reality, though, and I agree with Michael, when you really get down to November, there's going to be a pretty clear and stark difference. I think that there's things that the Democrats are making movement, and legitimately so. That's the nature of politics. I don't see a true, honest, unabashed, progressive, candidly speaking, being ready to be elected yet in this state. You never say never, but that's not the race that I see breaking through if there's going to be a breakthrough.
Is there one where Democrats could win a statewide race?
Very
this time.
Interesting race is going to be the PSC with Chuck Eaton and his opponent, who has raised an enormous amount of money. In fact, right now has raised more, with the Plant Vogel issue being, you know, core and center to that race. Chuck's been an outstanding PSC member. I'm sure this woman is probably also outstanding. I mean, they're serious about what they're doing, and that'll be an interesting race. When the Republicans broke through, you well know and remember, it was on the PSC.
It was. Yeah. What about the Secretary of State's race, just quickly? John Barrow on the Democratic side, a known quantity in some parts of the state anyway, where he served in Congress.
A known quantity in most parts of the state. I mean, John Barrow has at one time or another probably represented more people in his state than anyone else throughout his time in Congress.
Well, if you just take everybody who went to the University of Georgia, everybody wear the Barrows, swore me in as a lawyer in 1978, judge did. Fine guy. It will be an interesting race. I think there's still clearly advantage Republican for a lot of just intrinsical organizational status quo, a little bit down ballot where people don't really understand, and if they're voting on down there, unless they know somebody, are going to tend to vote for the party that they know and represent. But he is a strong A-plus candidate. I don't think it could win, but it's going to give you a test of really basic strength of the Democratic Party. How close, in my view, hopefully not close enough, but it will give a good baseline.
Yeah, I would agree. Probably thinking that's probably, at least on paper, you look at all the parameters with him being a former congressman, with there not being an incumbent in there, definitely has a chance to win that. But there's two other things that we've already seen, primarily on the Democratic side, but some of this on the Republican side as well. If you look back to the primary, women did an outstanding, phenomenal job, not only in turning out, which they always do, but in winning the elections and making it to the runoffs. I mean, you look across the state, you go back to our home, Cobb County, women won every ballot, won every time they were on the ballot just about, and had top vote getters where they went into runoffs. So Lucy McBeth, we talked about earlier, was a top vote getter. So with more Democratic women on the ballot than Republicans, there's an opportunity for some pickups with that alone. And the second thing is just this, what we keep talking about, this blue wave. And is this real? Is this really going to happen? So, and just a sheer turnout of numbers, and whether that's, you know, anti-Trump or whether that is just engagement from a lot more people within they've never been involved in electoral politics, that's going to be something we're going to have to wait and see. But if that does happen, we definitely have an opportunity to pick up seats up and down the ballot.
We will take a break right here. The Political Breakfast continues in just a moment.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Back once again on The Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Happy to have you with us. Our regular breakfast companions, Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson, are off this week filling in. Former state senator and former Republican state chair Chuck Clay and Cobb County Democratic chairman Michael Owens. Let's move quickly to Cobb County, where both of you are from. And Cobb County is actually kind of the poster child for all of Metro Atlanta when it comes to budgets, taxes, assessments, property values, and how all those things fit together. Michael Owens, Cobb County is facing a $30 million budget shortfall. Commission Chairman Mike Boyce and other officials are holding listening sessions with folks because they have a lot of options, none of them pleasant. Do you raise taxes? Do you cut services? So are these town hall meetings, though, really going to give them a true cross-section of opinion in the county?
I don't think so. Number one, it depends on where you're holding these town halls, mm-hmm. what part of the county, because there's vastly different parts of Cobb County. And number two is who shows up, right? So, I don't know. That it's simple math to me, right? You spend money, you have to make money, you balance a budget, mm-hmm. and it makes happen. $30 million is nothing to shake a stick at by any means. So there has to be some hard choices made. And I think for too long, if you look across the metro area, Cobb County taxes are low, and they have been low and very low. Mm-hmm. And the former county chair, Tim Lee, touted that, and he ran on that as a platform. And
lower taxes,
year after year of not having to raise taxes, and it sounds good. It's something that you can put out there and go, yeah, move to Cobb County, have a great life with very low taxes, but chickens come home to roost. And that's essentially what's happening here in Cobb County. And it's very tough when you start talking about closing libraries, adding costs to senior citizens to start paying for parking at central mm-hmm. locations, which, by the way, $5 or $3 mm-hmm. parking is not going to add up to $30 million in any of our lifetimes.
But the argument is if you want those services, you got to pay for them. And if the county's in a budget crunch, money's got to come from somewhere.
You know, as we start the growth that we've had phenomenal growth mm-hmm. in Cobb County. I mean, you can't talk about economic development without talking about the Brave Stadium that's came.
I was going to ask our former commission member, Chuck Clay here, who served on the Cobb County Commission, about that one. But very quickly, finish your point.
No, it's saying we have to get to a point where we are growing in Cobb and the economic development supports that growth. By means, incentives are great and fantastic, but you've got to pay your bills.
And I don't, I was going to say, talking about Cobb, it's personal now. All the niceties are off. To me, it's a different issue in part because this is a dollars and cents issue. I have greater concern is that the commission itself is fractured. And you've got to have a consensus. If they want to cut $30 million, they can do so. If you want those services, you have to pay. The bond rating services, think about what you're going to pay if you go from a 3A, AAA to a 2A, or even to 2+. Think of how much more money every homeowner pays when that fire insurance and your police, all this infrastructure items start having a much higher cost when you invest in infrastructure, which we all have to do. So this is serious business for which we're politicians. I was a county commissioner. That's why I left in 2 years. Well, I could still get out of town. These are tough. And as opposed to 56 senators or 180 House members, there's five. Mm-hmm. And one vote is generally going to swing and make a difference. So there's nowhere to hide on commission votes. They need to find somewhere to get in a room and commit each other to an outcome that can get at least three, preferably four, preferably five, but four so it looks like it's broad-based. Are you going to get that information from a listening tour? They're fantastic for public input. That is no more a barometer for public opinion than it'd be asking me. So, but truthfully, you can get that info. You're going to sounds overused, but polling, identification, issue polling that's focused, you can get the temper of the times. They need to present a united front.
Real quickly for both of you, because you both look at the Atlanta region too, is Cobb, because of its budget shortfall and the crisis there, is it the canary in the coal mine, though, for the rest of the metro area, which is also seeing property values rise, costs rise, taxes probably on the way up?
Yeah. To me, it's part of a growing metro Atlanta. We talk about the world's as busy as airport, right? And we have this confluence between 75 and 85 and 20, which is all great for us as a regional entity. But it's about smart growth, right? It's about growing in a way that, as I said before, that we can pay our bills, but we still, you know, become that shining beacon on the hill for other cities. And I believe we can be that example. But it takes transparency. There takes forward looking and thought, and it takes a matter where, you know, you got to balance budgets. Simple as that.
And you go back and think, you say Cobb County, you go back to even to the 60s, and gosh, you can go back to Bell Bomber. These were all public-private. These were a public investment in many respects, in some cases with Ernest Barrett, water and sewer, when everybody mm-hmm. thought, why would I want that? We've got a septic tank that works just fine. Well, you know, you look back on it, and everybody says he's a visionary, and he was. Mm-hmm. Now, how you want to
he's
pay
got a
for
parkway
it?
Named after him.
Yeah, it should be.
Yes.
In fact, I was the third vote to put it where it is. That wasn't fun. But the point is that you do have to do those. The day where you can just say, we're the lowest taxed, and I'm not for a minute advocating higher taxes, but if you're talking about the kind of businesses that are startups, it's technology, it's infrastructure, it's job, employment, trained employees, workers, relationships with your Kennesaw State, your Chattahoochee Tech, and public K-12, and the private schools too.
So real quickly, what would you say to somebody who says, okay, well, I thought the Braves Stadium was going to bring in all kinds of development and therefore all sorts of tax revenue for the county? The Braves might have gotten tax breaks, but they were supposed to spur all this revenue-producing economic development. What happened to that?
I don't know that it hasn't. I mean, depending on whose statistics you want to talk to, and I'm not necessarily into that debate either, but if you're a believer in it, look, the long-term benefits of a sewer plant that was treating nothing in 1967 kind of looks pretty important in today's look back. I don't know whether it's going to be a disaster. Bell Bomber worked, water and sewer worked, the Galleria has worked. I suspect the Braves over time is potentially a wonderful asset.
I support the Braves have from day one coming to Cobb County. I think it's a fantastic investment. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the deal and the MOU and all that too much.
MOU is the Memorandum of Understanding, yeah. A very controversial thing.
Yes, but the idea that there's going to be $2 billion of investment right in Cumberland area and kind of expand out from there, first of all, that doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it just doesn't. And people have to believe in it. I think the single largest thing that I have to say about it is public-private partnerships. We have to be willing to enter into those, explore those, and see how that can benefit us all.
Having been there in the heyday of Braves, I can tell you where you see those $2 billion. Hang another pennant up there that says World Series. I'll be there every day.
Also Cobb County related, and very quickly, there's a new president at Kennesaw State University, Pamela Whitten, who came over from the University of Georgia. This state officials hope will calm down things at the KSU campus after quite a bit of turmoil for over several years in leadership at the top, the final years of Dan Papp's administration, and then the turmoil surrounding former Attorney General and former Cobb Commissioner Sam Olens during his time as KSU president. Is this the answer, do you think, Chuck Clay? Or are we, this was a search that didn't seem to go beyond the borders of Georgia.
Shocking. and I think there's some good. Personally, I do not know this woman, so I'm not speaking for anybody's advocacy. I think the potential is exactly what is needed. Some of it's public perception, which is who's running the asylum, to producing a product that people focus on and not who's where and what's who's on first in the administrative decisions. She is a provost. She was a provost at one of the nation's premier largest universities. You don't be a successful provost without having rules, accountability, expectations, and a whip you ain't afraid to crack if you have to. And I think that's exactly what is needed right now.
First of all, I'll go on record saying I was not the one who called KSU an asylum. It is the third largest university in Georgia, a very fine establishment, I do believe.
I have a son there.
but in all reality, I think perception is key in this, and I think that I have all the hopes that Ms. Whitten will really come in and be a really strong sound voice and provide that leadership for KSU. I love the fact that it's outside of the political realm and it's not a political person getting in there, because I think with Sam Olens there, there was always unrest and there was always going to be a bit of unrest. And then, you know, getting involved in issues that, you know, have any type of political tinge to it was always going to be, you know, just very spiked.
The cheerleaders and kneeling during the anthem, among others.
Many things. I think with Sam Olens' background, besides the fact of being a fine man, his connection to the political arena only heightened those things anytime there was an issue. I mean, I will leave that discussion for another day about that. But having someone come from academia and leading an institution like, you know, UGA, I'm a Georgia Tech alum, so I'll leave that other part alone.
Oh, great.
But
that negates most everything that's been said so far.
But I hope she does a great job. I have all the confidence in the world, and as a fellow Cobb County citizen, she can count on my support whenever she needs it.
Go Bumblebees, but a bulldog through and through. But more importantly, it is a flagship university. It is defined. It has been the economic keystone, along with Bell Bomber in Cobb County. We don't want to forget it, but now it's all of North Georgia, and quite candidly, regionally, it needs to not just run smoothly, it has to look like it's running smoothly.
Good point.
And as we close out, the World Cup is coming to Atlanta in 8 years, we hope. Certainly, the united bid by the U.S., Canada, and Mexico was successful with FIFA, the governing body of soccer. Atlanta is on the short list of cities that could get some of the games. Chances, you would think, look good with a new stadium
and
Arthur
team.
Blank behind it.
And a great team.
The success of Atlanta United on
wow.
the field. So, are you guys soccer fans, number one? And you've got 8 years to get to be one if you aren't already.
Well, not like anybody. I played 4 years in high school, and certainly I did the intramurals, and I've coached all you kids as you're coming up, as that has sort of exploded with lacrosse as being kind of the game out in the around the state of Georgia, both of them. I'm not a hardcore, but I've grown to actually admire and greatly respect both the passion. The one great memory I had was from the Olympics, because I was chairing the oversight, I guess, for the World Congress Center.
The games were over in Athens.
With the final, and I was there for that final game of Nigeria, and I want to say Argentina. You talk about a stadium that was just, you couldn't get help but get swept up. Nobody sits down. There's a horn blowing every quarter of a second, and they don't stop singing from beginning to end. It's fabulous.
Yeah, I'm not a huge soccer fan, or as the rest of the world calls it, football. But I look at this as another step in the direction of Atlanta becoming a truly global city. I know that the FIFA committee was here back in April, and one of the things they touted was that big, beautiful Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And quite frankly, that's why it was built.
It's in the newspaper today.
You know, I think it's great when we talk about, you know, the stadium being built. You know, we didn't get an opportunity to talk about, you know, the whole Amazon thing. But it's part of showing that Atlanta is truly becoming this global city. And we, you know, we tackle our transportation. And, you know, I think we're one of those premier cities in the world. And, you know, with FIFA looking at us for the World Cup, I mean, that's what it says to me.
And soccer football fans will follow their team. If there's a team from the South Pole and Antarctica, every single citizen will be there. I have never seen such a moving fan base in my life, and it would be great for Atlanta for everything that Michael's just said.
Talking about economic impact, I mean, FIFA brings it.
Yeah. And Penguins will be bringing vuvuzelas if Antarctica wins. And that's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. We've been joined by Cobb County Democratic Committee Chair Michael Owens and former Georgia GOP Chair Chuck Clay, now with the law firm of Hall, Booth, Smith. Thanks to you both.
Delightful, Michael. It's great to be with you. Dennis, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Pleasure to be here. Chuck, what great doing show with you.
Thank you.
And thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. Now, if you like this show, subscribe, and you can do that wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to rate us. That's a good way to make sure that other people can find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. We'll be looking for you.
Thank you. At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.